Listeners and old to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Very, very esteemed pleasure to be broadcasting in the United States and New Zealand and of course through the internet streams around the world trying to get out some decent information that no other scumbag will actually even bother to do. Such as a lot of very interesting things that have been posted on guerrilla media of late. For example, kids in Scotland, as young as four, are getting biometric ID checks. All right, dozens of Scottish schools have introduced these intrusive biometric systems such as fingerprinting to identify pupils as young as four. And apparently about 68 schools are now using this technology to manage meals and control library books and even allow access to toilets. Almost two-thirds are primary schools where fingerprinting and palm recognition can be used to identify young kids, and another 10 schools in Midlothian have the capacity for biometric ID but are not yet using it. And yesterday, critics said the extent which the technology was being used in Scotland's schools was worrying. You know, Isn't it nice, Will? You know, all the dangerous children.
Good to see old Scottish right up there doing their job. Totalitarian government.
And where's the tabs on all the wee ones.
where's the William Wallace style pushback? You know, oh no, they're all too fluoridated these days. Tom Cruise drinks their good water; they all get the fluoride. I mean. I don't know. It's sick, isn't it? How can you track children and then say, oh, it just makes things more efficient and it helps the librarian out and we keep the toilets cleaner this way. There's no one leaving messy toilet rolls around because that would be, you know, children can't be children. That would just be too inefficient. We have to run it like a Nazi prison camp in 2010.
Yeah, yeah. Children can't make mistakes. I mean, otherwise they would never grow up. Isn't it funny, though, that the process of raising children has now become, some people have it as a profession, like super nanny and whatnot, but most of the rest of the people, hey, they're not even allowed to do it. In fact, you know, I've been talking with numerous people in the United States and New Zealand who are having their kids taken off them for absolutely no reason. And now we've got stuff like this going on, and you'd think, who's best at raising our kids? The very parents who bore them into this world, or the government that's probably going to try and take them out of it? You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will. We'll be right back.
Well, there's only one thing I need to know. Whose side are you on? I got some so-called friends. My right to my face, all when my back is turned. They like to bury me without a trace. Oh no, no. Oh no, no. There's only one thing I need to know. Whose side are you on? I'm flying a JFK. My heart goes boom, boom, boom. I know that customs man. He's gonna take me to that little room Oh no, no. Oh no, no. There's only one thing I need to know. Who's side you on? Who's side you on?
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back.
Down and out
of the Vinny Eastwood Show. With Will. On American Freedom Radio and, incidentally, the VinnyEastwoodShow.com, which I've just made a lot of modifications for. The archive section for 2010, so now it's its own separate little box, and we have also an archive section for 2011, which only technically has one entry in it, which is our interview that we conducted with Michael Murphy from What in the World Are They Spraying? And, of course, Bob Stevens from PH10 telling us an awful lot of scary things and a lot of good things about water itself. Back to the news. Anybody who's seen this video, this is just great, you know, and this is the thing that I love. We Are Change, all right? Anybody, if you're not aware of We Are Change as yet, those days are numbered. These guys have a lot of chapters all over the states, all over the world, apparently. And they are really, really hardcore, okay? They actually do go to take things to the point of arrest. All they do is go up and ask prominent figures questions about issues related to truthers, you know? And in particular, the one that I'm referring to here was We Are Change Chicago being arrested for questioning Dr. Oz about vaccine safety, right? He was just walking along beside him, trying to ask some questions and that kind of thing. He was very, very polite, was maintaining his distance, that kind of thing, just walking along in the same road. And then one of Dr. Oz's little scum, whoever the heck he was, just gradually, just gently gestures to the unidentified police officer walking with them and says, arrest him. And all of a sudden, this police officer grabs him, assaults him, pushes him up against the wall and stuff like that, as the We Are Change protester is saying, you're assaulting me, you're assaulting me. What kind of a society are we living in now where somebody can't walk up to a celebrity with a camera and ask a few questions? I mean, come on. You'd figure if anybody was used to having cameras shoved in their face and getting questions asked of them, it would be celebrities. But no! As soon as you start talking about vaccine safety and how the mercury in it is bad for the brain and you can never get it out once it's in, and how children are required to take 52 plus vaccines or something before the age of 5 in the United States, that's just cause for alarm.
Well, Vinny, they don't just have police around them. They have private security details, you know, roided up freaks back from working for Blackwater. And, you know, there's a local cop down here who I saw over New Year's. He's been out contracting for Blackwater in the past 2 years. I know that for a fact. And these psychos get into private security. They got all these amped up vehicles that look like normal Mercs and Hummers and stuff. They're like with pounds of bulletproofing in the doors and just bulletproof glass and weapons everywhere. I mean, they're not ordinary folk, and they just will nod or wink or give a gesture and you'll be dragged off somewhere. Yeah. And it's respectable, isn't it? It's more than a two-class citizenry right now. It's about, I don't know, 10 levels of... I don't know. It's like a caste system almost, Vinny. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the absolutely. Indian caste system? It's like 22 levels in the caste system. But we're getting there.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing that I really want to give out big props to We Are Change Chicago and We Are Change chapters all over the place, you know, Bakersfield, New York with Luke Rudowski and all of them. They're always, always on the streets, always doing something. And this is what I really like about protest movements that actually get things done and, more to the point, get things done on video. Because to do an individual protest, you know, as these people do, you know, just one or two people going out, it seems really insignificant until you can amplify it across digital mediums, right? It's the most important thing that you can really do. And you can get these people, like Dr. Oz, saying that all medicines have side effects. You know, toxins are good for you. It really kind of exposes the fraud he is, considering, of course, that his wife is virulently, and I use that term operatively, against vaccines and will not allow his children to be vaccinated. But that doesn't stop him promoting the bejesus out of them to get everybody else to jab their kids up to save them from the terrible man-made manufactured swine flu, which has two swine flu strains and a bird flu strain and a human flu strain all attached together. But that just occurred naturally, of course. Nobody knows that. Well, very few people at least understand that many of the viruses that we're getting vaccines to cure, or rather prevent infection, are man-made. And the vaccines themselves have more frickin' toxins in them than a toxic waste dump. But there's only a little small amount, you know. It's like a safe level of mercury, a safe level of cyanide, a safe level of arsenic, a safe level of fluoride. Isn't this the reason why our society is so degraded and scum-ridden, full of filth, Will? Is that people have become such relativists into thinking that even small amounts of poison are good for them, you know?
Well, what people do, Vinny, is they, the human mind wants to make society agreeable. We want to make our conditions agreeable with us. And so what a lot of coward scum out there do is they look for any sort of straw, they grasp at straws, any sort of thread they can to make things okay. And so when you say to people, and this has happened with friends of mine too, when you say to them that something major like fluoride in the water, even if you're not on the tap water, which I'm not, it's still in all the products you buy, it's still used in processing of just about everything. In the beers people drink, where they're bottled is in the municipal centres, you know. So when you say something like that, they'll grasp at anything. It doesn't matter how many studies you've got, they're just like, well, you're against the mainstream. How do you know those studies are true? And they get into this whole big philosophical debate, like you're having some, like it's Greek philosophy with, I don't know, Kant thrown in the mix and a few other scum, denialists. And they just pick on, you know, how do you know truth is truth? Well, nothing's really truth, and truth is all perspective, and that's your perspective that fluoride is poisonous, William. And why can't you accept other people's point of view? And they get all wishy-washy. Leftists especially, they're great at that. I mean, they're great at denying reality. You can just say the sky's blue to me. Hey, it's red to me, okay? Why can't you accept my reality?
Look, I've got communist-coloured glasses. That sky is red.
Things aren't black and white, okay? You're a right-winger. You've seen things in black and white. 2 + 2 doesn't have to equal 4. No, stop being so dogmatic about things.
Yeah, two plus two can equal whatever you want if we love it enough.
I'm like, for the sake of this argument, fluoride is poisonous. Like, anything can be toxic. Didn't you know that? Water is a toxin. You can, if you have an excess of water, you can drown. And they get all funny like this. I'm like, yeah, anything can be toxic, I know, but according to the WHO, over 20 parts per million of fluoride is dangerously toxic. And with our modern diets, a lot of people are getting over 20 parts per day. I mean,
yeah. And according to the EPA, it's a toxic waste.
Yeah, and so it's all the level of toxicity with all these things, the level of mercury, the level of fluoride, the level of MSG, but we are swimming in it. I mean, I went out to buy some sausages the other day, some honey soy sausages to go and have a barbecue with some friends down the beach. And yeah, sure, they didn't want to go because you can't have a barbecue because there was a fire ban. And then all the other the council barbecues were all empty because, you know, you pay tax to the state and they can't even provide basic functions. But anyway, the sausages had MSG in them, I noticed, when I was reading the packets. Like, oh, great. You know, the chips, you know, have got MSG in them too, most of them. And in fact, about 95% of the packets of chips you buy have got 621 flavor enhancer in them.
Yeah, I mean we've got this illusion of choice.
We are swimming in this stuff. And then people say to me, oh, you know, you just have to look on the bright side and think, oh, they'll be looking on the bright side when they're in the pit, you know, when they're in the bloody pit, half bloody mangled.
It puts the lotion on its skin.
I just don't get how there's a time for philosophical debate, sure. There's a time for religious debates, spiritual debates. But there's got to be a separation of truths sometimes. You know what I mean? Like, just as there is a separation of church and state. I don't know if I agree with that fully, but there's a separation of church and state. But they don't agree with separating truths. So what they do is they talk ultimate ethereal truths when you're just trying to talk about something ground level, like were bombs used to blow up 9/11. They're just like, well, blow up the buildings on 9/11. It's like, well, you know, that's your version of facts. You know, most people would agree that Al Qaeda did it. And so that's, you know, it's all
the majority equals.
If you could improve the efficiency of vehicles, I see this argument everywhere on certain, you know, fuel devices, whatever. There's a lot of scams out there, like these air tornado things, which are just basically a resistance in a car's air intake, which they claim creates a vortex and improves economy by 10%. Ridiculous. But there are some other ones that could be valid, and people will just say, well, if there were a fuel-saving device, if this were possible, every single company on Earth would be using it. And so because they're not, it's not valid, and they won't look into an argument. See, that's a form of social proof, but using corporations as society.
Because obviously corporations the same as saying, are so good for you and actually really look out for your interests and only sell your products that are good for you and that kind of thing, you know?
Well, it's like saying, Vinny, I mean, it's like saying, you know, every car company would have this fuel saver device attached to it if it works. It's like saying every company would have spirulina and chlorella, blue-green algae in their drinks if it was really good for people and they could market it. Well, they don't, but it is. You know what I mean? So
it's
it doesn't.
Because it's because it's not addictive enough, you know? They can't get you to keep endlessly consuming it and wanting to go back for more is the problem.
Yeah, it's because, well, soft drinks are designed not to quench your thirst, so you drink more, you know, and MSG, flavor enhancer, is designed to addict you to a pack of chips, so you finish that whole pack of chips by yourself on the couch watching the Hollywood propaganda movie, you know, so the whole system is engineered not from a point of view of even making money so much as control.
Yeah, making sure that you're basically controlled like a little car, you know. You're not in the driver's seat of your own body when you're drinking these poisonous beverages. You're not in the driving seat of your own mind when you're eating all these bloody mind control substances that turn you into a freaking retard. You know? I mean, come on.
I can understand people's point of view when they say perception is reality. I can understand where they're coming from. But they can't understand. You see, 6-7 billion people can have their perception. And then one little agency can launch a nuclear bomb and that can alter everyone's reality. That's the difference between perception and reality. They don't seem to get it. They don't get it. That regardless of your perception of things, there are overruling principles. The sun is 99.85% of the mass in in the solar system. Okay, the climate change people can't understand that. They can't understand the correlation there. They think that's a conspiracy theory. They think that's an outside chance that the sun is driving our climate when it's 99.85% of the mass in the solar system. Amazing. Unbelievable.
Yep. And on top of that, speaking of groundbreaking principles and whatnot, U.S. to stay in Afghanistan forever, and from Press TV, senior Republican senator suggested that the U.S. Should devise a plan to permanently keep American troops in war-ravaged Afghanistan. And, of course, this is probably just an addition to the 50-plus permanent bases that they're building in Iraq already. Okay, the Middle East is becoming the, I don't know, like Battlefield 2000 or some crap like that.
Well, Vinny, you know, well, Vinny, geopolitically, people perceive it's the most to be happening.
Geopolitically, it's the most important region in the world. You know, we've got a heck of a lot of oil reserves in there and wars over resources and all this kind of stuff. But I don't believe in peak oil because obviously it's abiotic. Have a look at the big oil price shock that was happening in the 70s, where supposedly all the oil in the United States was running out. And you go back into the States now, hey, they're pumping out more oil than ever before. How did that happen? It's because the wells refilled. All right? Oil is not a scarce resource. It is the second most abundant liquid on Earth. Period.
Yeah, and it regrows itself.
And what's happening here is that
a lot faster than a lot of people think. They find relatively new leaf structures and ferns and whatnot in oil all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. And the theory for calling it a fossil fuel came from the La Brea tar pits in Los Angeles, where they had found a whole bunch of like animal bones and leaf structures and that kind of stuff in this tar pit, all right, made of oil. So they thought, okay, wow, this oil must be made out of animal bones and plant matter because it's got animal bones and plant matter in it. Kind of same principle as looking at a vodka martini with olives in it and saying, hey, this vodka martini must be made out of olives because it's got olives in it.
The point is to the peak oilers, who stands to gain from saying we've got a scarce resource here? The Rockefellers do. Standard Oil does. The Rothschilds do. Royal Dutch Shell. All of them stand to gain by manipulating a false scarcity model as demand goes up. Then they can put the price per barrel up. And what are we seeing? I mean, there's a manipulation right there, but they believe all their statistics, Vinny, and then when we come up with stuff, they're like, well, I thought you were against mainstream media. How can you use a mainstream source? People go and try and debunk the truth movement on those terms all the time. How ridiculous. Media is designed to put out disinformation. They hide real facts within that all the time. They tell you the truth, and then they spin it. So when we're saying the media lies and Fox News lies and CNN, it doesn't mean every single verbatim piece of information is a lie. But then idiots out there can't even understand that fact. They make videos debunking Alex Jones or whoever on that premise. That's how stupid some people are.
Yeah, I mean, it's the simplicity of logic is just kind of lost on our society, really, isn't it? Because we've been trained like a bunch of little dogs to stop trying to get out of the yard, to stop tugging at our leash, to stop questioning our reality, to stop wondering where the heck our food comes from, and to stop trying to bite the hand that feeds us and enslaves us. And you are going to wind up just being somebody's little bitch, to be sure. You're listening to The Vinny Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, and we'll be right back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Lindsey Graham, the Republican senator from South Carolina, told NBC's Meet the Press on Sunday that Republicans would push for indefinite U.S. stay in Afghanistan in the years ahead. We've had air bases all over the world, and a couple of air bases in Afghanistan would allow the Afghan security forces an edge against the Taliban in perpetuity. Of course, those Taliban who are getting married and having their small villages full of supporters blown up indiscriminately with absolutely no proof that they're actually Taliban whatsoever. Which gives them an edge, of course. Oh, the genocide. Now, this would be a signal to Pakistan and the Taliban that they're never going to come back. In Afghanistan, they could change their behavior. It would be a signal to the whole region that Afghanistan is going to be a different place. i.e. mostly full of bomb craters. At the expense, of course, US taxpayers, US servicemen, and Afghan people. But, of course, not at the expense of the elite, who really love protecting their frickin' pipelines so that they can maintain energy dominance over the rest of the world and keep us all quietly enslaved economically. In my opinion. Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano said on Saturday, the experts will train Afghan police and customs officials to better manage the country's border crossings. Napolitano, who currently has 25 agents on the ground, up from 11 a year ago, went on to say that 52 former US Customs and Border Patrol officers will arrive in Afghanistan in 2011. So the United States is now taking care of border security in foreign nations. Hey! Has that been happening for a while? I probably think so. And goodness knows how many hundreds of countries, or I wouldn't say multiple hundreds of countries, but probably at least around 100 countries, that the United States has military bases in. How much cost is that to the US taxpayer, I wonder? How much benefit does it really give the American people? More to the point, how much benefit does it give the countries who are occupied by these particular installations? Regardless of whether or not those countries are in wartime or peacetime, the general justification for doing so is to basically maintain peace and order just in case some manufactured crisis, which we engineer to scare the living bejesus out of everybody, calls us to call into action all the poor soldiers that have basically had no opportunity to get jobs in America have been forced to join the military. And send them in to freaking die as a blood sacrifice to the blood god. You know, I mean, basically that's really it, isn't it? All these people have no idea that their commanding officers are being lied to, and then they're just passing lies down. We're doing it for freedom. Okay, I'm killing small children for freedom. How fantastic is that? That makes a lot of sense to me. But of course, I've been trained through basic training not to question my commanding officers, because that's unpatriotic. Just like Lieutenant Colonel Terry Lakin, who refused to follow orders until President Barack H. O'Barry showed his birth certificate. And he's now currently facing court-martial, will lose his pension, and this guy's a frickin' war hero. More medals than you can ever really count, even. You know? Somebody who actually is a patriot, somebody who actually cares about his country, somebody who actually wants to follow the Constitution. Not the cons that run the United States foreign policy, like Kissinger, evil scumbag that he is, who said recently in released Nixon tapes that if Jews were executed in Soviet military camps, it would be of no concern to US foreign policy. That's the basic reality that we're living in here, that the military-industrial complex, all the associated cronies, have such a stranglehold on information, a stranglehold via compartmentalization of even the armed forces and the political wings and corporate wings themselves, that almost they can do anything they want and nobody winds up caring about it, and even if they do, they don't do anything about it. That's the reality. And another example, you know, to support my claim here, because I'm just, you know, conspiracy theorizing away, aren't I? UK Met Office knew Big Freeze was coming, but hushed it up. From Rachel Quigley out of the Daily Mail. The Met Office warned ministers to expect an exceptionally cold winter, but then kept the prediction secret from the public. And decided not to reveal the information because it was embarrassed after wrongly predicting a barbecue summer in 2009. Instead of a seasonal forecast, it offered only monthly snapshots. As temperatures fell to a record low, train services were badly disrupted, roads were covered by snow, and thousands were stranded in Heathrow as flights were cancelled and the airport struggled to clear the backlog. Now, with Britain shivering through a third winter in a row, shouldn't the weather forecasters have warned the people of Britain well in advance? And why didn't the Met Office tell them? All right? The truth is, it did suspect that they were in for an exceptionally cold winter and just told the cabinet office so in October. But we weren't let in on the secret because the Met Office no longer publishes its seasonal forecast due to the ridicule it suffered for predicting a barbecue summer in 2009. So instead of facing ridicule and just going, yep, we were wrong, sorry about that, we'll just come up with a new prediction, believe it or not, because obviously we're so freaking inept at predicting weather anyway. But of course, we can tell you what the weather's going to be like in 50 years due to global warming. It did forecast in November that December would be bitter, but many Brits have taken the prediction with a truckload of salt. And they wish that they took it with a bit of a more truckload of salt so they could put it on the roads.
That's the problem too. Is you just grazed over another problem with people's brains, Vinny, these days. Is, you know, remember how we talked yesterday about great activists in the north of New Zealand here, Claire Swinney, and how she said evidence of chemtrails been used in New Zealand to a prominent Green Party MP and was just shut down because if anything overlaps with the whole issue of toxins in the environment, or especially something that could affect the climate, then the only thing some of these people can think is climate change as it's branded by the UN and Al Gore and George Soros and all the rest of them. To be so sort of monotheistic, I guess you could say, in their dissemination of what a global problem is. You know, it can only be this. It can only be this. We can only focus on cars. We can only go and smash SUVs up. That's the only purposeful action we can do. You know, like, doesn't it just leave us wide open, Vinny, when you've got just there's just one problem. So for the fake right, they use the war on terror, and for the controlled left, they use global warming. But then there, these problems, these wide brush problems, provide them the necessary excuse to carry out multiple operations within those paradigms.
Yeah. Well, they can suppress your rights and surveil you without warrants with the war on terror, and they can gradually squeeze all the resources that you consume, raise prices, and take away every bit of sovereignty you've got using global warming. So the end result is that you have a surveillance society with absolutely no freedom, full stop, comma, comma, rule off. That's the end of the paragraph.
What I'm saying is even without that final solution, I'm saying that they can use a manufactured problem, a promulgated problem, such as man-made global warming, to overshadow real things they're doing towards engineering the climate, to overshadow Bill Gates and his little cloud seeding program and trying to reflect the sun's rays and all the rest of it. Whatever they're doing, spraying heavy metals up there, aluminium, barium, strontium, you know, they can use the global warming mantra to overshadow all these other agendas.
Well, and speaking of which, interestingly enough, scientists, and this is an article from gorillamedia.co.nz, have discovered how to create downpours in the desert. Apparently, this is according to the Daily Mail, technology created 50 rainstorms in Abu Dhabi's Al Ain region last year. Isn't that freaking incredible? I mean, they've wanted for ages to make that land beautiful and fit for growing crops with fresh water on tap. And now they're using technology designed to control the weather.
Everything has a flow and effect. I mean, the green movement should be worried about this because if they really did care about the environment, these people don't care. That's the point. They don't care. If you care, you're interested in a variety of issues. You're eclectic. If you don't care, you're this narrow-minded person with a big loaded agenda from the UN. But you see, if you create any form of energy in one area on this planet, you're taking it away from somewhere else. There's a finite amount of energy. You cannot, I mean, for instance, people talk about tidal energy systems. You cannot take momentum out of a current and convert it through turbines into electricity. You can't just take as much as you want without having disastrous effects, i.e. you might create a bottleneck before the entry to turbines, as the water won't want to pass through, that resistance. You could create erosion, underwater trenches, different current systems that disrupt migration patterns of fish and animals. I mean, there is no such thing as a free lunch on this planet at all. For someone to get powerful, others have to lose power. For energy to be created, or for storms to be created, energy has to be taken from somewhere else. This is, and it affects the whole ecology.
Absolutely.
Of this planet we're living on.
And most of the storms happen to be at the height of summer in July and August, where there is usually no rain whatsoever. And people living in the UAE and United Arab Emirates, of course, Abu Dhabi, were baffled, all right, because some of it turned into hail and included gales and lightning. The technology is actually kicking up storms here, right? And what I find very interesting is that, hold on a second here. Let's have a look at all these amazing, different, extreme weather phenomena and patterns that we've got going on here. We have articles coming out all over the place saying that we now have access to weather modification technology and are, in fact, using it in all different places. And then all of a sudden, we have these biblical floods in Australia and Pakistan. We have these ridiculously massive forest fires. We have heat waves that you've never seen before, and cold snaps that are so ridiculously freezing that you wonder why you bought a freezer in the first place.
This is the problem, Vinny. People say without that we've got all this information, and it's not a lack of information that's stopping us from taking on the New World Order. It's the lack of people's perception. It's the lack of open minds. It's a lack of understanding. It's people saying, well, why? Why would they do that? They're trying to work out an agenda rather than just look at the evidence on the ground and go, okay, they are doing this. Okay, 9/11 was an inside job. Then wonder why. You can't just work out a 5,000-year-old agenda by looking at a single piece of evidence and then wondering why. That's not the way it works. You have to first establish that there is a problem, that you have to first establish that climate change, man-made climate change, is a fraud, that the war on terror is a fraud, and then you have to start looking for motivations if that's what you want to do. These people just try and work it out in the first sentence. Oh, why? Why would they want to do that? Who are they? Why do you say they all the time? Oh, because if I told you who they were, just the groups I know about, and I don't even – I'm not claiming to know it all either. But if I told you who, the Club of Rome or the Committee 300 or the Council of Formula, they don't know these people anyway. So there's no point
We'd have to list dozens of organizations that you've never heard of that have been in control of your life since before you were born.
But this is the point, as far as I see it. This is the why to them. All these suckers out there, and I feel sorry for them, they make videos on YouTube and that going, conspiracy theorists, why? There's no need to do this. Well, this is why. The elite are psychopathic occultists. They believe they're becoming gods. They believe that soon their empire will be crowned. They have to create a counterfeit reality. That's counterfeit everything. Counterfeit money, counterfeit climate, counterfeit sexuality, counterfeit just everything. All the information in your mind, counterfeit. Counterfeit entertainment, counterfeit news, just counterfeit everything. They want to create counterfeit clones in the image of their god.
And you will have to worship it. You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show with Will on American Freedom Radio and Rush 89 FM in Hamilton, and we will be right back momentarily. Broadcasting live from the future. And the future looks bright. It's the Vinny Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And incidentally, Rush 89 FM in the Tron. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I kind of wanted to read out just the explanation of how this weather modification technology is working. The Metro System scientists used ionizers to produce negatively charged particles called electrons. They have a natural tendency to attach to tiny specks of dust, which are ever present in the atmosphere in the desert regions. These are then carried up from the emitters by convection, upward currents of air generated by the heat release from sunlight as it hits the ground. And once the dust particles reach the right height for cloud formation, the charges will attract water molecules floating in the air, which then start to condense around them. And now if there is sufficient moisture in the air, it induces billions of droplets to form, which finally means cloud and rain. So that's basically how you do it. It's not a terribly difficult process whatsoever. Well, Vinny,
when you're at school and they teach you how clouds form and all the water cycle and that, I mean, it's disinfo too. They leave out the part that you actually need ionized particulates at altitude to form any cloud. That's, most people are completely unaware. That's a conspiracy theory too. So yeah, that cloud seeding has been around for a long time. There's other techniques. People used to put poles of certain length and diameter to create different frequency sounds, put them in the water of boats and bang them with certain frequency. There's a variety of methods. But to create actual large fronts, then they need to be seeded.
And you know, on this note here, we were discussing over the break about, you know, you said that it's kind of not going to work because people have this inherent not wanting to understand things, or rather they can't, and you give them too much information and they'll never be able to make a decision relative to their own place in this world, right, so that they can actually be effective. And I was having a conversation last night with somebody I just met about resistance itself, and at what point do you start resisting and stop researching? And you know, as far as I know, the point that you reach is when you realize you're under threat. Okay, that basic human instinct of being in danger is your motivation.
Well, okay? Wait a minute. I don't agree with the framing of the question. Start being active and stop researching. I don't think one should stop and one should start. I agree with an internal battle against tyranny, but also continued learning, because otherwise the enemy is simply going to outsmart you. That's a problem with a lot of activists, not in the truth movement per se, but in other fields. They don't learn that much, and they get one or two ideas in their head, and then they go for hell for leather. They're not really being effective at anything because they haven't rightly identified the enemy.
Well, that's true.
And I think that's a problem with a lot of activists.
Well, once you do rightly correct your enemy, that's when you really do have to start getting active. And that's what I mean by that, is that, you know, it's all very well to know heaps of stuff and to keep researching and researching and researching and researching and researching.
The enemy is a cognitive enemy. It's not an enemy that can be shot. It's not an enemy that can be burned. It's not an enemy that can be pushed down with tanks. It's not an enemy that requires millions of people to rampage the streets. None of those things will ever cure it. The enemy is in your mind. That's the problem. The enemy is when someone comes to me and talks to me at 4 o'clock in the morning the other night and says, yeah, I'm interested in a lot of stuff and I've been listening to the show secretly. I don't want to tell other people I know because they just want to, you know, friends of theirs and a couple of people I know, and I said, you know, they just want to live their lives. That's the thing, Vinny. That's what I was talking about during the break. A lot of people just want to live their lives. They don't understand what living their lives really even means, that most of their life is being controlled and designated by people they've never heard of.
Yeah, and that's a sad thing. I find my life is incredibly fun because I get up and then I actually do something about it, you know. I do the radio show, I do the videos, I put up the articles on Guerrilla Media and, you know, getting a reasonable amount of traction or whatever, you know. People are enjoying it.
Not everyone's life is defined the same way.
That's not everybody. That's right. That's right. And for me, it was just a personal choice. I could sit at home and watch endlessly documentaries, that kind of thing. And I can still watch information. I can still absorb. I can still read articles, that kind of thing. But I'm making sure that a decent proportion of my time is going into doing something about it. Because it's all very well to sit at home and basically accomplish nothing except learn. Right. There's nothing wrong with that. Just as long as you're actually eventually going to do something with the information you ingest, you know, and that's the motivation that really gets out. Spreading it out. Start a radio show. Go to blogtalkradio.com or something. You know, there's nothing to stop you from starting your own radio show, from starting a YouTube channel, from starting a website. You can do these things all now for free. And all you got to do is just email stuff around. Have a look at other websites, grab information, doesn't matter.
There has to be tax involved. People have been brought up to believe that everyone's opinion's got the same worth in this sort of communist-type socialist view of things, and that just because something's your opinion, it makes it so. You know, and so you just can't go around disseminating information without having some sort of pushback because people think, oh, you're proselytizing, just like a JW knocking on their door. Oh, there's a lot of turnoffs involved, and that's why propaganda works so well. That's why the people who control the levers of media, not alternative media, are such master propagandists. That's how they get in people's brains without them turning off to them.
That's what I like about YouTube, is that when propaganda goes up on YouTube, you'll find that there's an absolute maelstrom of truthers commenting on the videos, debunking it and telling the people that they're scum, liars, pieces of trash, New World Order lovers, etc., etc. You know, we're basically taking over the internet, and that's why they want to shut it down. So that, therefore, it's a very good idea to exploit what little opportunity we have to use the internet as a vehicle for mass awakening, as Zbigniew Brzezinski explained to the Council on Foreign Relations that he was threatened by. That's right, you New World Order scum. We know who you are, and we're coming after you, and we're waking up humanity, and we're making sure that you ain't gonna bloody enslave the rest of us. If you are listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will, the lighter side of genocide, and we'll be right back after the break. Number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. I've just made a whole bunch of modifications there. We've got a grand new archives section full of Kiwi collaborators. When we have Kiwi guests on the show, admittedly I've been kind of a bit lax and my responsibilities here, but I try to edit out the interviews of the Kiwi guests and then put them all on their own little archive section called Kiwi Collaborators. Because one thing that I find very interesting about New Zealand is, you know, politically and globally, it's a very interesting case study nation. You know, all the same things that are happening in the US are happening here to, you know, in certain varying degrees. But the more interesting thing is we have a similar brainwashed, dumbed down, fluoride head population. No offense, New Zealand, but you're kind of designed to be pretty retarded. Which I find very unfortunate because we've got so many creative people in this country. Intelligent, hardworking, well-meaning people who are very well manipulated. And in order to wake them up and possibly wake up the rest of the world, the Kiwi activists that we have on this show reveal things, know things. Because when you're listening to the news, you're listening to the pundits, either by political parties or corporate sponsorship, who have certain things that they can and can't say. Activists, I find, who live and breathe the issues, who make virtually no money from whatever they do, bar a few donations here or there if they're lucky, know these things inside and out, and you benefit disproportionately, in my opinion, listening to them, than you do from anybody that you will hear on mainstream media, because they don't give an F. You know, they'll say anything. That's why activists are the people's pundits, in my opinion. That's why we should listen to them as often as possible, in my opinion. Because who better to get your information from than the people who are on the front lines, who know what they're talking about, who devote their lives to them? That's what the point of the show is about, is to give those people who have devotion to their country, to their people, to truth and justice, the coverage that they deserve. Because apparently, there's nobody else in this country who's really trying to do it to any great extent. You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show on American Freedom Radio and Rush 89 FM in Hamilton. We'll be right back after the break.
Black sunrise, shadow coming over the sky. Black sunrise, always gonna be a surprise, 'cause we don't know.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Check out the Kiwi Collaborators section if you dare. Speaking of which, we have another one. Seamus Coogan. I had a conversation with this fabulous man yesterday for quite some time. And, you know, we had a few laughs and he's been really, he's one of those people who is actually a qualified researcher. All right. And when I say that, I'm not talking about like he's got like degrees and whatnot. I'm talking about somebody who actually looks at things and finds evidence rather than just drawing conclusions from assumptions like I do. Seamus Coogan, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for the charming introduction there, mate. It's cool, man. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, well, you know, everybody needs to have a voice, and apparently you've been looking around for a truth of radio show done by New Zealanders, and we're the first one you've come across.
Yeah, no, that's really, no, and it is, it's actually, it's really good that you're here, but as you said before, it's actually rather alarming, isn't it, that there really is only one radio station out there that's actually propagating some really good stuff. Like we were talking the other day, we've got so much. Sadly enough, even though you could probably say apolitical show, you've actually got a lot of really intensely right-wing kind of leaning sorts of shows that just crush anything. And no, I mean, I just listened to Leighton Smith this morning. I just can't stand the guy. No, we've got some real trouble here, and it's great that you've got a, that we've got a voice anyway. It's really important.
Indeed.
You're doing a good job, then.
Well, Leighton Smith's good on the climate change debate.
Oh, and Will. What's that one, Will?
Leighton Smith's not too bad on the climate change debate. He's kind of like Michael Laws. You see, the controlled right is good on one side of the coin, and the left are good on the anti-war side of the coin, I suppose.
Yeah, well, it's funny because for me personally, I don't really pay too much attention to the climate debate in a way, because on the one hand, Will, you've got massive corporations saying that there's no climate change and all that kind of stuff, and then on the other, of course, you've got these people trying to start making taxation on, you know, like climate control and all that kind of thing. Either way you look at it, it seems like it's a big scam for big corporations. But I think on the, I tend to go on the environmental side because I'm a green, basically. But also too is the fact that I do get concerned about the amount of corporate, you know, input and interest that's been put into the thing, into the anti-pollution side of it. That's a really scary lobby. And I know that might go against some of the grain of some of your viewers and possibly yourselves, but that's just how I view it. But maybe we could debate that at some other time, Will, you know, but it's, but because I think it's a good debate worth having for sure, you know.
Oh, it is. It's always one worth having, yeah. I mean, I'm against big corporations. That's why I'm against the world's largest, the Federal Reserve Bank, who issues a fiat currency, who's backing this new world currency they want to form from carbon taxes. So the whole environmental side of it does play into huge corporate lobbies, bigger than ExxonMobil even.
Oh, for sure, for sure. And once you start getting companies that have got, you know, higher GDP than countries like Germany, you know what I mean, which are pretty wealthy countries, you know you're in a little bit of trouble.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but Seamus, I mean, maybe you're being a bit deceptive here calling yourself left-wing because you actually want a debate.
I might have to take you to the gulag, mate.
That's the bait he's offering us.
Oh, yeah.
Throwing up.
That's some soggy potatoes and some horrible stew.
Almost, mate, almost. Maybe next time.
I've got a special to do for you, Will. No, but I think that it's important to have these debates and try and reach some kind of compromise with each other's thing. There's no point in having an argument with someone if you can't reach it, you know, if you can't reach a general conclusion by the end of it, because otherwise you may as well just be peeing. Hopefully the FCC will let me say that, just into the wind, and there's just no point. So if I'm on again and all those kinds of things, hopefully we can stir up some debates and then find ourselves with some conclusions. You know, that we can all find mutual.
When you were explaining that, I don't know if this is a bad thing or not, but when you were just describing, you know, having an argument and coming to a conclusion, I just had this image of a Western in my mind, so like a gun draw going on. I don't know why. Is that bad? Is that bad? No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, well, we've got Eastwood here.
Have Eastwood on that side, so
I'm definitely the ugly in this equation.
Well, we can be the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Yeah. Is Clint Eastwood in the good and the bad, and the ugly? Is he technically the good, or is he the bad, or is he the ugly? I mean,
it's been a long time since I watched it.
You know, he's quite an interesting character, isn't he? I forget his name, just the man with no name, isn't it? He just likes to wear sequins. But in the other one, he was the good. But in the film, and I think another one which was kind of regarded as the sequel to it, Clint Eastwood actually I think he actually sort of technically raped a woman, I think, and he was still regarded as being a good guy.
Well, good guys like, always work for the government, so I guess they have to be rapists. Mandatory. Yeah.
Well, speaking of, look, here's a good one for you guys. Speaking of rape, what about that guy, Assange, whatever? I've looked into it after a few times. Look, I'm with you guys. As soon as I found out that he had absolutely no claimant, he thought the whole 9/11 truth movement, which I'm not a truther, guys, but I know, I don't know what I am with it, but I know that it's a crock. When he said that, you know, he didn't believe that 9/11 was some sort of inside job, I couldn't believe. I mean, how can people think that he's like he's some kind of truth-seeking hero after a comment like that?
Yeah, he's the man with all the declassified documents, and he can't even work out the most obvious false flag op of the last century.
Absolutely will. Sorry, man, for it's great to talk to you because no. And then, of course, you've got newspapers like the New York Times and all that kind of getting in behind him and all that. And he's got some big corporate protection now. And is it the New York Post that Rupert Murdoch owns? I'm not sure. But you start getting groups like that in behind you, you've got to question the credibility there, don't you?
No, you're dead right. Your logic, I totally agree with. I mean, we've had other people being whistleblowers for decades. People like Stan Monteith going back decades now. And we're all conspiracy nuts, you know. This guy comes along, you know, and he's well-spoken and looks very wealthy and well-placed and all the rest of it. And the media's behind him, Time Magazine's doing pieces on him. He's just the hero. Alarm bells straight away.
Absolutely. As soon as you get Time Magazine, you know. I think there was one, I'm not a huge fan of Burmese, even though I quite like him. I remember, didn't he call Time Magazine, or was it no, he called General Mechanics, didn't he? Popular Mechanics, like a Hearst yellow rag, you know what I mean?
Doesn't like James, what's the name, from Popular Mechanics. Yeah, sure. I think they falling out there. James Meggs.
Yeah.
Yeah, he is a piece of garbage.
So that was right. That's what I would regard, say, Time Magazine as being a yellow rag, you know, for sure. I mean, well,
Know Time Magazine? Here you go. To get into the conspiracy side of things, to get deep for a minute. Do you know that Time Magazine was founded by Skull and Bones, remember?
Yeah, Henry Luce.
Yep.
Well, the thing about Henry Luce is this is where we start getting into the Kennedy assassination, all that kind of stuff. And he also, it was Hearst that used to have Popular Mechanics, or whatever it was. But this is where we start getting into the Kennedy assassination, which I've been researching for a number of years. And the issue about secret societies and guys like your Henry Luce's play an interesting part, not so much because of the secret society thing. In the next couple of conversations, hopefully, if you guys would ever want to have me back on after this disastrous intro, we could start talking about some of the secret societies and so forth supposedly involved. Now, Luce was a very powerful media magnate at the time, and he was also an enemy of John F. Kennedy. He was also a part of what I would call an important cog in what's been termed Operation Mockingbird. I'm sure you guys have heard of that, eh?
Of course, yep. Yep, Glenn
Beck. Absolutely. I'm a CIA employee.
they teach us this at the agency. And they give us the lowdown. Yeah. That was in week 3 of our training.
Yep.
Week 3 of the training.
I'm too busy. That guy Vinny's too busy making me laugh over the top of this. You're asking some. What was there, Will?
No, I just said that was in week 3 of our training at Langley, that they.
Oh, mate,
that'll be used against us one day.
Yeah. Oh, I think hopefully, so, mate.
Yeah, it's to Venus CIA.
Oh yeah, and it'll be used by somebody who is like, I don't know, carries around a sense of humor in their pocket like a set of loose keys and loses it from time to time. You know what I'm saying? Come on, people. Get a sense of humour.
Yeah, one of those 40-year-old virgins taking the mickey out of us on YouTube. Yeah,
just sit back and enjoy the disinfo. Don't you know perception is reality?
Oh, mate. Anyway, look, okay, before I pee myself, I've got to get some serious stuff out of the way here, okay? So this is going to be what I'm going to call dropping the log. The log of knowledge, I would do. No, the analogy there is pretty gross. But so this started about, I think it was 1952 to 1953 was when all this started. Now, Operation Mockingbird, in my opinion, and the opinion of most of the researchers that I work with, and that's a group called CTKA, funnily enough. I was about to say CIATKA. But it's,
do you have a website there you can plug?
It's Sitka, just CTKA, and just type in Jim, CTKA. Yeah, there's another thing that'll come up underneath, it'll say the Central Texas Kidney Association, but this one actually means Citizens for the Truth about the Kennedy assassination, okay? And that's pretty much, that's whom I'm affiliated with, and that's run by an amazing guy by the name of Jim DiEugenio. Now, he does a lot of work on another amazing radio show as well, which is called Black Op Radio, which isn't syndicated, okay, like you guys, but it's independent. And that's run by a guy called Leno Sanek. And it'd be great if you guys could one day, and I'll try and help you guys out here, trying to get, say, someone like Len on, because he's got an amazing conference coming up in Hawaii this year, in which they're going to have Oliver Stone, Jesse Ventura, they'll have Jim there, and a lot of other people attending. So this is really big because it's been it's almost been 48 years now, and there hasn't been one definitive voice from the JFK research community, okay? And so Len thought it was, hey, it was about time that they got the best researchers together and they came out with some cohesive plan, you know, or an idea of actually what happened. And so this conference is going to be very big. If you've been following the Kennedy assassination, at all, you know, it's something to really keep an eye out on, and especially have a look at Black Op Radio as well, which hopefully you guys can forge a little bit of an alliance with at some point. It'll be great. But Sitka is really important. We basically focus on research. That's the thing. We don't really like, how would I say, Will and Vinny, we don't really like making circumspection, you know. We don't like anything that's a little bit loose. We tend to be really careful of. It's just nuts and bolts. And sadly, what I've noticed right throughout the truth movement and the JFK thing and all that is that anybody can just get a blog and just put out anything that they want. And the big problem is that you're actually regurgitating a lot of disinformation, which we mentioned the boys at Langley, you know, putting on a different face. I think in actual fact, they've done that, guys, and they've done that quite effectively, just drip-feeding rubbish stories that people pick up and circulate. What do you guys feel about that kind of stuff? What's in your guys' experiences, what examples of disinformation can you guys see around you?
The climate change movement. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah. Well, you know, yeah. It's just like more operatively, the question would be, what haven't we seen as disinfo?
Right. Yeah, true.
You know, everything's bollocks. I mean, take fluoride, for example. You know, I asked the Minister of Health why they were using Prozac and rat poison and putting it into the water supply, and he says it's good for your teeth. I sent him a message, an email with a big, you know, document attached to it, which is the confessions of the guy who's the head of the Auckland Dental Association, who was paid by the Dental Association to travel the country and convince communities that fluoride was good for their teeth, admitting that everything he was talking about was a lie. There was no evidence to suggest that fluoride was good for your teeth. And I said to the Minister of Health, Minister, it's going to be a strong man, somebody who actually loves his country and cares about his people, that will actually do something about this very important issue, which is one of the most important health ramifications that this country has ever seen. And so naturally, he passed it on to the Assistant Minister of Health.
Who, interestingly enough, is a
great opponent of a 1080 dropping, which is a fluoride derivative as well, being dropped in our forests. And then he replied with a whole bunch of government documents saying how it's good for your teeth. And then I said to him, hey, well, didn't you know that the same thing that's in that 1080 that you're opposing is being dumped into our freaking water supply, sir? And he gave me no reply.
Well, it's a bit of a bright, he's a bit of a bright spark there, isn't he? You know, I mean, it's a really great idea, you know, to do a bit of a double entendre there, you know what I mean? You picked him out on that. Like, in terms of the fluoride and all the water and all that kind of stuff, like you said before, you know, I brush my teeth with it, and all, or he said before I brush my teeth with it. That's a funny one. But the thing I was going to ask you to, it's more or less along the lines, not so much of disinformation, but people that you've seen that have come along and they say that they've got all these great conspiracy ideas or they believe in some stuff, but you know that they're selling, like in Asange, you know what I mean? Like, he's selling a lie, isn't he? You know what I mean? It's that trying to look like he's cool, but he's not. You get what I mean? That double dealing.
I think he's the most prominent one. There are certain movements I don't agree with. Like, I don't agree with the Zeitgeist movement, but they could be earnest in what they're trying to do. I don't know. I don't tend to think there's too many other people who are really bad guys out there. But that could be my naivety. I just like seeing, if I disagree, like a lot of people disagree with prominent people in the truth movement, hey, at least they're doing some of the mainstream media work.
Oh, yes. You guys, ladies and gentlemen, we will be right back momentarily on the Vinnie Eastwood Show.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca road when along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac, with me you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa, Oklahoma, Tampa, Panama, Mattawa, La Paloma, Bangor, Baltimore, Salvador, Amarillo, Tocopilla, Barranquilla, and Padilla. I'm a killer. I've been everywhere, man.
Welcome
I've been
back
everywhere, man.
Across the to the Funny Eastwood man. Show. Breathe the mountain air, man. Broadcasting everywhere. At the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Goodness knows. In fact, we're starting to get a lot of websites linking us in, and I wanted to give a special shout-out to all of those people who, you know, devote a small section of their website to putting up a banner from the Vinnie Eastwood Show. And if you have a website, then you'd love to put our banner up on it, just to give us a wee bit of a linking in there. You can email producer at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com and we'll send one right out to you. Thank you very much. Coming back to our fabulous guest, Seamus Coogan, coming at us live from Palmerston North. Palmerston, Palmerston bloody North.
That's the home of all good things, mate. Center of the universe.
Certainly the center of something. Sorry to our Palmy listeners, but but you know, we wanted to get into like what actually woke you up, Seamus. I mean, you told me that you've been kind of researching and getting things done for the best part of close to 17 years or something along those lines. What spurred such a ridiculous career of truthology?
Well, that's a really good question. It's good to kind of bring a little bit of sobriety back to this. Not that I've been drinking or anything like that. I haven't been drinking anything at all. But I have been drinking from, the chalice of truth would be the term, as you said, for 17 years. That sounded really pretentious. But no, it started off for me when I was about 8 or 9 years of age then, and that was when my parents sat me down in front of TV and they watched the Martin Sheen and Sally Field docudrama that was on. It was just a documentary, straight up documentary, and it was just called Kennedy. And I sat down and watched it, and I was quite amazed by it. I thought, "Wow, you know, this is a really, really interesting story." And of course, Kennedy gets shot. Of course, at the end of it, they do the logical thing. Of course, you know, Lee Harvey Oswald does it. you know, of course, that's how they're portraying it anyway. And so I thought, wow, so I really got interested in John F. Kennedy. But as a kid, you know, this is really funny. As a kid, I always thought it was great that that Jack Ruby stuck Lee Harvey Oswald. But why? Because he killed Kennedy, of course, you know, a bit of vengeance. And it's quite so it's quite funny, really. So, but my mother always used to say to me, there's something more to it. There's something more to it. And mothers do know best. And as it turned out, my parents are have been involved in the Palmerston, in the Manawatu peace movement and the New Zealand peace movement for a number of years now. And they organised the May Day concerts and everything like that here in Palmerston North. And yes, Will, they're pretty, yeah, we're pretty damn socialist, mate. Sorry.
Oh, no.
So we're all there. And so, but that was it. And so because of their political activity and their involvement, I started to get a little bit more cynical. Then by the time I was about 13, I was like, oh, God, yeah, there was something probably happened. But I was kind of into this mafia did it tone and all that kind of thing. Well, I still had doubts. So I hit The Men Who Killed Kennedy. That came on TV in 1992, I think it was, just before JFK the movie came out. Now, you guys have seen the Zapruder film before, right?
No.
Oh, yeah, of course. Of course.
You know, we'd see Kennedy's head get, we see his head get, you know, taken off.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's called the Zapruder film, and that was filmed by a fellow called Abraham Zapruder, sorry. And he was standing on the knoll and on this little thing. I'll get into more depth about that some other time. But he filmed it anyway. And so now when you guys saw the headshot, what direction do you guys think that it came from, judging by what you saw?
Probably the front right.
The front right.
Some people say the driver, and then I think it came from behind him to his right.
But just judging by the just judging by his actions in the film,
judging by the way his head moves. But yeah, I'm not an expert on it though.
No, I'm not a ballistics expert too. But I tell you what, you might be in a little bit of a minority there, Will, because every single person, chief, that's seen it. Has noticed distinctly that it comes, you know, back and to the left. You know that scene in JFK, if you guys are seeing that, back and to the left, back and to the left.
I probably have to watch it again right now.
Yeah, well, you have a review of it, Chief. Have a review. But that was,
I mean, in my mind, it's a very complex subject to work out. In my mind, I kind of simplified it and like, well, obviously, one shot doesn't work out. And then, you know, knowing about the mafia connections and the Bush family connections to them and people like Giuseppe Mazzini and goes back to the Masons and whatnot.
Right. We're probably going down a little bit of a track there that we might have to discuss in some other episodes.
Really? You don't think the mafia had any connections?
No, well, the mafia had connections, of course, to Jack Ruby, and that was possibly through Santos Traficante. But other than that, the mafia didn't organise anything in this operation. It looks very much like it was some kind of Central Intelligence Agency operation. It sounds cliched, but it's very true. This is one of the best researchers come out with this. And
one thing that always got me is why the Secret Service guy, he's protesting, waving his arms around a few times in the air. Why guys weren't on the back of the vehicle? They were dropped off around the corner.
No, very good question. A person that's written a lot about that is a guy called Vince Palomara. And no, that's a very suspicious. That's a very suspicious act, actually. The agent, I think, I'm not sure who the agent that orders the guy off the car is, but the guy that's waving his arms around, I think, is a guy by the name of Ribka. Okay, and he tried to jump on the back of the car because it was standard stuff. You have two guys on the platforms at the back, but he was getting waved off, and that happened at Love Field. And that happened quite often while they were going along the motorcade. I think a number of times they tried to get on the running boards and they were actually warned off. So that was just one of the only incidents of it. In terms of the assassination, I don't think that anybody can actually dismiss Secret Service involvement in that at all. I think there were people in the Secret Service, from what we do know now, especially through Vince Palomara and the work of Jim Diodino and others, that there were members of the Secret Service that actually hated Kennedy. Okay, a lot of them were really quite conservative and all that kind of stuff as well. So, no, there's some definite suspicions about the Secret Service there, and Vince Palomara is someone to read. Some of the problem with a lot of the Kennedy stuff, though, Will, is that because of it's so because it's so research intensive, sadly, it's actually really inaccessible. It's quite inaccessible in some ways for people that are unfamiliar with the case to actually get into. And I think that's one of the great weaknesses of the field, is that it really hasn't been what I call it. I call it Carl Sagan, in the sense that I'm not a huge fan of Carl Sagan. I think he said some horrific stuff. But he wrote that book, Cosmos, in which he put a lot of, you know, he put a lot of really simple things into.
I've got his book, The Demon Hoarding World. I wouldn't say I'm a big fan of him either.
Right. Yeah, well, that's right. The stuff he
said. But in my opinion, the JFK thing is just an open and shut conspiracy. JFK signed two resolutions, presidential 11110 and 11111, abolishing the CIA and abolishing the Federal Reserve, and then he gets shot. Case closed.
Well, you know what? It's really funny because Kennedy had an interesting history with the Federal Reserve, and one of the people that you brought up the other day was a guy called Ed Griffin. Okay, and I've struggled with some of Ed's stuff, Edward Griffin. So I've struggled with some of his stuff over the time. But one of the articles that I found really interesting was how he was discussing, you know, the difficulties that Kennedy was actually having. There's a lot of myths about the Kennedy assassination, and the Federal Reserve one is an interesting part of it, and there might be some elements of truth to it. But there's a whole other bunch of factors as well. And J. Edgar Griffin wrote a really interesting piece about Kennedy's relationship with the Federal Reserve, which I think people should go and have a check out. I don't think he did too badly on that. Another person, if you want to look into the Wall Street angle of it, or the banking thing, one of the best books that I've had recommended to me is by a guy called Donald Gibson. Hopefully one day we can get him on the show and he can talk about that, okay? And he basically talks about, you know, the interests of Wall Street and how involved they were in the Kennedy assassination. And there's a lot of that. I'd say around about a good 80% of that book is absolute gold, okay? And when you get 80% in the Kennedy field, mate, that's a very good book. So that's something else to look at too. So, yeah.
There's been a lot of commentary from people who are heavy-duty researchers into the JFK and people who've been trying to make films about it, that it's almost impossible to do because there are so many elements. And reportedly, over 100 people, 100 witnesses who were saying that they saw shooters on the grassy knoll and things of that nature were killed in the following days.
Well, see, that's another. All right, geez, that's a good question too. Look, there's definitely been some suspicious deaths. I think there's no doubt about that, Vinny. I can't really name any at the top of my head. Dorothy Kilgallen was a really interesting one. That's one that really sticks out for me. George Demornchild's death. Look into that guy. That's a really interesting death. We could talk about him some other stage. But some of the numbers, I think, were a little bit grossly exaggerated. They put them up just to sell a newspaper. I think that was the idea. But there was definitely some suspicious deaths, though, for sure. And let's not talk about the amount of people that were harassed. You know, they were intimidated and told to shut the hell up, which goes par for the course in anything like this, isn't it? So that's the... That's really interesting. But no, that I'd take that whole story, and that sort of originated with a guy called Penn Jones. He was really into it. And so some of the stories it was a newspaper article, I think, that said that, who'd used some of Penn Jones' stuff. I'll correct myself on that issue later on if someone tells you how badly wrong I got that one. But sort of, if I could bring it back, if it's okay, guys, just to one thing. So anyway, there's a whole other culture in the Kennedy assassination too. It's the reason why it is so hard, is that how we were talking about the headshot, Will, and we were talking all those sorts of things, what we saw. When I saw that film, I immediately thought, right, this is a conspiracy. He was not shot from behind, as a whole bunch of other people have done. Now, the big issue here is that we've got a version of reality here which goes even above and beyond the conspiracy itself. We call it the alterationist phenomenon. What that is that you've got people, and I'm not going to name names. If you want to learn more about the Kennedy assassination, you will. But they think that basically every little piece of evidence has been manipulated after the fact. Photos have been faked. Well, there might be some evidence of that. That's not such a hassle. But it's like, you know, Kennedy's body was hacked up on the plane to prove that there was, you know, like the lone gunman thesis. It's just some ridiculous.
Before he managed to get into anywhere that would do a credible autopsy on him, of course.
Well, that whole story is bunk, man. You know, it really, really is bunk. And they had no need to do that when the military were controlling the autopsy in the first place anyway. A lot of that stuff is pure myth, man, and it's being foisted upon people as if it's being truth. And it really hasn't been. It's untested and it's speculative and it's also BS. Okay, so really, and that's going to offend some people that have really bought into a lot of these things. Now, one of the more current myths as well in terms of all of this is that the Zapruder film has been altered. Now, I'm sorry, but whenever I see the Zapruder film, I see his head go back and to the left. You know, I don't know what it's been altered for. That's proving a conspiracy to me. I don't know what other planet other people are on. But some people are saying, oh, little bits have been taken out. They've altered it. And then some guys even gone as far to say that Zapruder himself was a CIA agent. And this person, by the way, is the same guy. Just a question. What do you guys think of the idea of no planes flying into the World Trade Center? What do you guys think of that?
Sounds pretty I don't believe it necessarily, but, you know, I would if somebody would present some description of credible evidence to the contrary of my belief, then,
yeah. I know some no-planers,
but the problem is where did the crossover from a holographic event to a real event happen, because there's no denying those buildings came down.
That's right. And so that's right, the no-planers. And they've been quite a divisive force, haven't they, within the truth movement at times?
Well, if you look at that crazy freak they had down, Nico, down at Ground Zero, who was one of the prominent guys. I mean, he's a psychopath. He's probably working for them. He was there to provoke violence and punch a few guys and so on.
Yes, indeed. And it is a lovely, lovely truth movement, isn't it, ladies and gentlemen? Not fraught with danger and discrimination, is it? You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will. Our very special guest is Seamus Coogan, and we'll be right back after the break.
We're gonna make love. You know how I know? Because it's Wednesday, and Wednesday night is the night that we usually make love. It's because it's when everything is just right. There's nothing good on TV. You haven't had your social netball team practice, so you're not too tired. Oh yeah, sounds like it's all on. You say something to me like, I might go to bed, I've got work in the morning. But I know what you mean. You mean, oh yeah, it's business time. It's business time.
It's business. It's business time.
That's what you mean. You mean it's business time. Oh.
It's business. It's business time.
Yes, it is.
Oh, yeah.
It's business time.
That's right.
At the Vinnie Eastwood Show, we're having a little bit of foreplay with our fabulous guest, Seamus. You've got a monstrous cackle on you there, mate. All right, now we were talking over the break. We were talking over the break about disinfo, and who was that guy that you were talking about before the break, Will?
Nico Haupt, a crazy, I don't know if it's a crazy German drunkard thing that used to hang around at Ground Zero. When I say used to, he was doing it until last year. He finally got arrested the KSM protest led by We Are Change guys. But like, he'd just go down there and say, We Are Change are shills and Luke Radowski is this, that, and the other. And he just, in this crazy accent of his, swagging around. Heading woman, and I mean, he's just out of hand. The guy was nuts, like genuinely nuts. But then I know a couple of no planers here in Auckland, New Zealand, and they're not bad people or anything. Some of them have done some amazing research, and you know, they've said to me, "Oh, if you look in this video here, taken of you know just after the South Tower impact." One of these guys is a Canadian actor, and I mean, I followed a few leads like that. Hey, there were some suspicious things. You know, the guy who The guy who straight away is interviewed after the Tower 1's collapse, I think it was, and he says, oh, you know, mostly due to structural failure because the fire was just too intense. I mean, he speaks right. like an engineer after just witnessing a few thousand people be destroyed, you know. It kind of psychopathic, kind of, well, to me, he's an agent. To them, he was an actor in this larger digital cinematographic screenplay. You know, it's just, it's a way where then the media comes back to us, and people like Kim Hill here in New Zealand and other half-wit shills, they, shills on another level, dumbass shills, they then come and say, well, what theory do you believe in exactly?
Yeah.
What theory of 9/11? Well, there is only one theory. It's a controlled demolition, you know, and that's all there is to me. And I like people like Richard Gage. If I was going to subscribe to any one storyline, I agree with Richard Gage and Scholars for 9/11 Truth. Other than the ones that defected with the no planers.
Right. Yeah. Well, the no planers and stuff like that are really interesting, Will. And you mentioned before about setting up straw can. We talked about straw candidates, and I think that's what this sort of thing does. And I know two people. One of them's really lovely, and I really quite like him. But there's another one that's sort of a little bit off the boil. But those two are some of the major proponents. I think, in actual fact, the one person that I'm talking about that started a lot of this JFK, not started, but supports a hell of a lot of disinfo in the JFK field, which serves to confuse and confound, and particularly people that are new on the scene, was prominent in the no planes hitting the World Trade Center theory. So this is and this is the thing. I don't think that the person himself is actually being conscious or being an actual agent himself. But I think not Nico, but the person who originated it. One of the originators of it is
the Web Fairy.
Yeah, the Web Fairy would call him. Yes, and I think that in actual fact, you know, I talked about it with Benny the other day, Will, and you might have talked about it before, though, too, but just the use of useful idiots, eh? People that think that they're in a position of...
They're designed to create a fog of war so that newcomers come to a movement and they're just too confused. They don't know what weighs up, what weighs down, and then they just go back to being a zombie. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's right.
Yeah, that's why technically I'm not part of any movement. I just gravitate within all the different groups kind of thing whilst not being an active member of any organization at all, apart from, you know.
Except for Guerrilla Media.
Yeah. You know, well, Guerrilla Media is my organization, and if people want to join it, fine, because I can't control you.
Can you join your group? Is there such thing as a joining membership thing? No, not really.
Not really. I mean, I don't really care. Everybody could post up whatever they want and just straight up go in there. There's no real agreements to sign other than, you know, don't swear and stuff like that. And you can just go for your life. I mean, I basically don't care about credibility and things like that because, well, I don't have any. That's why I bring people on the show that do. Because I think people should listen to them rather than me. I just happen to be good at presenting them.
Oh no, for sure. But I think we're all attachments, isn't it, mate? And I think you're doing a great job. And I think you're actually quite knowledgeable yourself. Don't talk yourself down, man. Like, but CTKA is very much the same thing as that, guys. Okay. So you mentioned just the Guerrilla News thing. I'm not actually a member. In actual fact, it doesn't actually have members as such. There's nothing official and all that kind of stuff, but it's a group of people that get together, and it's not a clip group either, though some people get the impression that it is. It's just people that put together really good research, and we all support each other through it, and we peer review. We're the only group. Do you know what? I think we're one of the only peer-reviewed groups on the internet that looks at other people's research, okay? You get a whole bunch of people together and we go over it. And that's one of the only groups that does that in anything, in either 9/11, or we know that we're the only guys that do it in JFK. Probably there aren't too many people that do it in 9/11 either.
Just say, mate, 9/11 was a...
inside job.
Controlled demolition. It was inside job. There you go. It was a controlled demolition.
Well, do you know what?
It was a setup.
Do you know what? I've got to make Well, my
we're running out of time here, and Seamus, I'd like to thank you very much for coming on the show with us today. And, you know, like Will said over the break, you're more of a two-hour guest, so let's bring you on again sometime. Thank you very much. Yeah, thanks very much, ladies and gentlemen, for listening. Hope you enjoyed it, and we'll be back again tomorrow. Check out the archives at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com.